Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And I am very grateful to be with you on this ninth day of January 2021. It's already flying by, isn't it? Or is it? I don't know. Sometimes it feels like it just flies by no matter where we are in the year. It's old age. Today we're going to take a look at something that people have these potpourri questions that I find really interesting. I have entitled this program My Big Question. And if you had a question, if you had the chance to ask a great question that might be something that changed your life, I think it is interesting to hear what people would think would be that question. What would be your question? If you had one question that you think would absolutely change your life, change the way you think, change the way you live, offer you whatever it is that you would need to maybe live more consciously or be a more conscious person, what would that question be? That's an interesting thought to me. So I always invite my listeners, my viewers, to offer me their big question, whatever it is. And I'm always interested in the quality of it, where it goes. Questions are interesting things. Sometimes people will ask questions, like on this radio program, and they've already got an answer. They already know what the answer is for themselves, and they're just going to hear me or anyone else and weigh it against their opinion. That's basically what it is. They want to see if they could be possibly right. Other people ask questions to find out where they think they should be. And they listen to people and they ask questions of people they respect and they have some regard for, to kind of weigh and measure, well, if he or she thinks this, then maybe I should. Rarely, rarely is there a person who ever asks an authentic question for the sake of understanding, for the sake of maybe looking at what they are thinking about or the subject matter, and maybe working it to think in terms of another point of view, a way of posturing and positioning my mind in another way rather than the ways in which it likes to posture and position itself. How you and I posture our minds is a very important thing, whether we lean here or lean there or have any opinion at all. So I want to say this to you before I answer any of these questions, and they're wonderful. No answer is correct. No answer is correct. Every answer has to do with either the opinions or the genetics of another person that we are asking. And you can only hear the answer or agree with the answer that your mind has been postured to believe in or is postured to think in. And if you had heard, let's say, the Buddha in the day he lived and you asked him questions, I am sure his answers would not have been anything you would have agreed with. And same thing with Jesus, Lao Tzu. You would not have probably agreed with them at all. So decisions are made. Imperfections are there. Anything that passes through the human mind is going to be filled with opinion, speculation, bias. So please try to understand that. And these questions that I'm going to answer, I am honored to answer, but I want you to remember they're my answers. They don't necessarily have to be yours. And I don't want you to think in terms of me being the last word in your life. I am not interested, frankly, in the questions. I'm interested in the posture of the mind, where the mind postures itself in you, in the bias of human fear, human anger. I want you to see how every answer that you would get would mean the same to you, even if it were the ultimate truth. It wouldn't matter because of the way your mind is postured. This is what is important about these questions. So I wanted to make that kind of well known here. First question comes from Nat, N-A-T, Nat. He does not tell me where he lives. He says, I've heard you rant and rave about God. So what is God if he's not the God we believe in? Nat. Nat, in my March discourses, which will be coming up before you really know it, I am doing a series on Christ consciousness, and I talk about the Gnostic God. This God that we have is basically what is referred to as a Judeo-Christian God. And this guy knows all, is all, made all. He is something of fairy tales are made of. He makes man in the image of his own likeness. How arrogant, narcissistic that would be. But that's the kind of man he is, you know. And he screws everything up. He's really a screw up. And his own creations are betraying him, or are they showing us the quality of a God that is fallible, like we are? Well, we are the image and likeness thereof. So it would come to be that if we are, and he was stupid enough to give people free will, that would be something of a, shall we say, a bad trait. Anyway, all of that is baloney. And the God that we have in the Western culture is simply to appease the idea in a human being that there's someone or something in charge of this world, of this lifetime. We need to believe that because we can't control ourselves. This has been shown to us in the pandemic. We refuse to stay away from the things that kill us, that cause great pain and sorrow in other people's lives. We don't even have empathy. I don't expect compassion out of people, but some empathy I would think we would have for one another, but we don't, because we have no sense of our own spiritual awakening. We have no sense of who and what we are. There's the who we are, Nat, and the what we are. The who is the bias, the human genetics, the DNA, living in a human carcass as we do, that becomes the what, and much of our life is based on the survival of that carcass, and that's all we're really interested in, avoiding suffering, having pleasure, and never dying. Those are things that we actually believe in and we think are relevant to our own life. So we put all of our attention there. There is also, on the other end of that, the what we are. And that goes beyond the carcass. It's what brought us into the carcass. It's past life experiences that have brought us to that place where the way we are going to express and the way we're going to move into the what is through the who, and that's a very painful thing to do, but that's what we do. And to do all of that, we have to go through this human experience, and you have to ask yourself, where is God in all of that? You're God, okay? And you are looking for a God that would explain all of that to you, a God that would be logical, reasonable, have the same attributes as you, reward, punishment, love, hate, things like that. But it doesn't work like that. The Gnostic gospel in the teachings of Jesus and the Gnostic God is a God of basic principle. It is, shall we say, not personal. It is in stages that we move through lifetime after lifetime. And in these stages where we have as our great teacher futility, and we start to understand the emperor of all malice that lives inside our human heart as our human heart, we start to see how we undermine ourselves, and that the whole effort of living is to simply relinquish and let go of the human aspect of me and all of the bias that is contained in that, and move into the what. And most people can't do that. The Gnostic God is not the same as the God that most people worship here in the West, or in the world even. It is a God of principle. The principle is love. And love and principle, this principle that I'm talking about, cannot be conceived of or thought of through human logic and reasoning. It's an impression. And once you have the impression, you are aware of that impression, you see that impression for what it is, you no longer live in the bias of human instinct, human belief, human ideals. You live beyond the beyond, as it were. And that is what truly is important in our life. But, Nat, we don't do that. So, what is God? You're asking God to me or God in general? I am more a Gnostic guy, and I always have been. I've never fallen to my belief that somehow there is this great God in the heavens somewhere, and you try to please this puppy without knowing who and what you're dealing with. I think the God that we see biblically is a madman. I like it that Buddha and Lao Tzu do not call him God or it God. I know why Jesus did, because he was talking to farmers and simple-minded people and culturally Jewish people, people who thought of as the Father being a loving, caring kind of entity and being, because that's what fathers were in those days. A loving father was a very meaningful thing. There's nothing wrong with any of that. It's not about wrong. It's about what people relate to. And I think Jesus was a master psychologist. He knew exactly what he needed to say, how he needed to say it, in order to serve the people around him and bring about new insights about why they were here, how they got here, what this life is all about, that whole thing. It's very, very important. It is extremely important. So there you are, Nat. I don't know if I answered your question the way you'd like me to, but I'm just going to say God is love, as Jesus said. And I think that is probably the best anyone could ever say, because that has been my experience as well. You have to have the direct experience to really appreciate the depth and beauty of that statement. God is love. If you just meditate on that, it's a wonderful thing. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question is from Ted. He does not tell me where he lives either. What is God doing? Is he in control? Who knows? Why should we even believe in him? Ted from somewhere. I don't know where. Ted, I think these are very good questions. I do. If you start questioning your religion, I think you're doing the right thing, for me at least. This is a Greg Penn opinion based on only my own experience. So, you know, I don't want you to, like, adopt this attitude unless it's something that you've already been doing. You asked me, what is God doing? I have... Well, the Christian God is just up to as much mischief as can be. The Christian God needs an opposite. You know how we have opposites to our personality? You know, we have the good angel and the bad angel. Well, God has the good angel and he has the bad one. That's why they need a devil, because God created everything, and supposedly, and so it must mean that God has an alternate personality disorder, and he has this devil within, and people. I love it when ministers get all riled up. It's real comedy to me to watch them do all of this. And the sad part is when they get into the hell and brimstone kind of thing, how many people you can lure in. I mean, thousands, millions of people love the idea of the conflict between good and evil. They love it. And they love to think that they're on the good side and everybody else is on the evil side. So they live in the good and evil of it all. Over and over and over again, the good and evil, the good and evil. So they don't recognize that the devil, which is supposedly another one of God's screwed up creations, is a fallen angel. Well, how the hell did that happen? Oh, hell. How did that happen? Okay, if God is purity and all power and all that other stuff, then why is there this opposite reaction, this craziness that we get involved in? Because we like it. We love to make God in the image of our own likeness. We like that whole shebang. This isn't anything that you should be taking to heart, you know, that there is this God that can do thumbs up, thumbs down, take your baby, you know, and kill it and have all sorts of terrible accidents. You know, oh, it's God's will. It's God's plan. He has a plan that's greater. Well, tell me what the heck it is. Well, no. I'm not gonna. That would be horrible. People are basically, Ted, they're stupid, basically. The majority of people only live by their instinct, and that makes us stupid. And when we get that stupid, we can be manipulated. And it's not about being wary of those who have an ulterior motive or maybe an ulterior message, like maybe me. Being suspicious of me, you could be suspicious. I ain't going to change anything. You can be against me or you can be for me. It doesn't really matter. And once you understand that a person has a fate and a destiny to fulfill that is beyond the confines of your religious beliefs, whatever they may be, then you start understanding the network you're involved in, the network of right, wrong, good, bad, the network of the collective unconscious that dwells in the Kali Yuga stage of human development, which is very hard, very difficult, iron, rock. You see it in our politics. People will say this is unprecedented what we have seen, that Mr. Trump has made popular. He has awakened primitive human instinct in people. And 45% of America, and probably more, have that human instinct to survive, and they make it very difficult for others. We don't work in harmony, in love, in kindness, in sharing. We don't believe in that. We believe that what is mine is mine, and you're not getting any of that. And so with all of this being said and done, what is God doing? Well, he's up to mischief because we are God. We make up God. So if you're ever wondering what you're praying to, it's to yourself. Is he in control? Well, are you in control? Are you? There's certain things you can do and certain things you can't do. But are you in control? No. You're getting old, and believe it or not, you are dying. Your body is dying. So you're not in control of anything. Neither is he. Who knows? Well, the shadow knows. You, you know deep inside you. You know. You know you're full of baloney. You know it. You also know this God is hard to believe in, but yet you relate to it because you are that God. You are the God of stupidity, just utter, cruel stupidity that leads to all sorts of pain and sorrow in life and in this world. And we are not mature enough. We are prejudiced. And we live in a prejudice about our beliefs and about our religions, about our theories. We live in a prejudice that causes us nothing but great pain and sorrow. And by God, we'll go through all that just to think that we're right. That's what's wrong, Ted. We need to believe we're right. I'm out of here. Please forgive me. Namaste. We're pushing time here. And the last question comes from Linda. She does not tell me where she lives either. Why are you so distant? I don't understand. You seem distant from your audience and traditional beliefs. I'm not, you know, I'm as distant as you push me away. You know, it's, the distance is in how you push me away. The things I say here on radio or on TV are not popular. They're not cohesive to common thought, human intellect, human impulse. They're not. So you think that that's being distant. And I am distant from all that, but I'm not distant. If you knew me, you would understand that. You would be able to see that for what it is, and you would understand, oh, it's what I hear him saying, what I think he's saying, how I interpret him that makes him distant. But you're not going to believe that. You're not going to understand that either, basically. You're looking to be united with whatever it is you believe in that you think is important to your life. And important to your persona, your ego, your vanity, your pride. Pride plays a huge, huge role in our lifetime. And what is pride? What is pride? Linda, think about it. What is your pride? It is the idea that you and I know something, anything, that we think we can draw other people into. The pride of some accomplishment, something that we think is important to our vanity, our ego, our status in the society, the culture, the world even. Pride. It's all about pride. And pride is based in the impulse of human emotion that thinks it's more powerful than other people's pride. And we fight over this around and around and around. We are not principled people. We are prideful people. And we are manipulative with our words, with our understanding. We can be politicians and lie to the public or lie to ourselves, lie to each other, and think that we're doing very well. And to the people who are the object of our prejudice and agree with our prejudice, those people we're very close to. But to the people who are not of the caliber, the ego that maybe we are, we see them as the enemy and distant and all of that other stuff that we like to think. And none of it is true. It's just the way I want to think of it. I love being around certain people, let's say, people who are more like my mind, my beliefs, than I would be somebody who isn't. Somebody who opposes them. We all have this human prejudice. And so when we allow prejudice to guide and manipulate us and tell us what's right and wrong, good and bad, we naturally form groups and then we form mentalities and then we form mental acuities that sustain emotionalism to the point where we only want to be around those people that believe like we do and think like we do. And oh my God, it just goes on and on. It drones on until we remove ourselves from the opportunity of the great love that lives within us. Don't let your pride and the psychology of your pride take you away from the chance to experience authentic love. If you do that, oh, you miss. And 99 and 9/10 of people that I know do that with great pride. I'm out of here with great pride. Actually, with great humility. Thank you, Linda, for your question. Please forgive me. Namaste. Thank you for listening. Got another set of wonderful questions coming up tomorrow. I hope you'll join me. Thank you for listening again, and please forgive me, eh? Namaste.